edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Meraz. Today, our guest is Mr. Marvin Brown, who's written a brand new book called How to Meet and Talk to Anyone, Anywhere, Anytime, Simple Strategies for Great Conversations. And some background on Mr. Brown: started his career in business as a financial planner, now runs his own company, worked as a national sales manager for the Dreyfus Corporation. And Mr. Brown, first of all, welcome to The Front Page.
Oh, thank you. It is definitely good to be here this morning.
Well, I had to take a look at your book just simply because I've not seen anything like it before. I mean, generally you would think that people would know how to talk to one another, but I guess the basic premise of your book is that we really don't in many ways.
Well, Chuck, you know, it is amazing, because I think that everybody knows that culturally the United States of America is just known throughout the world as having an open, free, and friendly society. And yet 95% of the people who live here just don't know how to go over to a person who they don't know and start a conversation. And then it takes them a while to get comfortable because they're not sure of the rules. But that statistic for this country is amazing, but it is true.
Why is it so hard for people to just converse, say, with a perfect stranger?
Well, interesting is that not only here in this country, but all over the world, but let's stay with America for now, parents spend hundreds of hours teaching their children how to speak. I mean, even when a child has been born the second day, and a mother is holding the child in her arms, she'll look down and she'll say, "Oh, sweetheart, you are so beautiful, and I'm your mother. Say mommy." And you could just hear from the tone and the pace and the end of what I said is they're already at 2 years of age, 2 days old, teaching a child how to speak, which, of course, is amazing because parents don't even think about it at the time, and even when I went through it, I didn't think about it at the time. All the child really hears when you're speaking like that is, because they don't know the language yet. And then, of course, as the child gets older, and at the dinner table, all of a sudden he says, "Can I have an extra cookie?" Or she says, "Can I have a spoon?" And the mother gives it to the child, and then she says, "Oh, and whenever you ask for something from anybody, say thank you." I mean, it's an ongoing process. And the last point I'll make before I come to answer your question specifically is then a child gets old enough for the first time to leave the house by themselves, maybe just to walk a block and a half to their friend's house or a block and a half to the school bus. And the mother will say, "Oh." And if someone stops to talk to you, walking by or from a car, and you don't know who they are, don't talk, keep walking. But the one thing that they don't teach children is how to meet people they don't know. And one of the reasons why is because they don't know how either. So it's self-perpetuating. No one taught the previous generation. No one teaches the current generation. And that's why no one knows how to do it.
Could it also relate to, say, an issue with shyness or confidence in the sense, and I've heard people say this before, "I just didn't know what to say"?
See, you just nailed it right on the head. That is the perfect answer. What happens is a lot of people, they talk to themselves and they say, they see someone at a party or a networking event and they're bouncing around and they talk to everybody. And people say, "Oh, gee, I wish I had that talent," or I'm just too shy to do that. And it's not that people are really shy. There is a percentage in the country people are shy. But it's about 20% of the population. And it's not 95% of the population. And what happens is they say, "I'm shy," when it's really feelings of shyness. Because, Chuck, let's say someone bumps into you, or me, or anybody, and it's really their fault. They knock something out of our hand, and they just look and they keep walking, or they say nothing. We may get angry. it doesn't mean we're you know, that you or I or anybody else is an angry person. We just got angry. And so it's feelings of shyness. And again, you hit it right on the head, because from the workshops that I do around the country, or people have, so many people have told me after they read the book that now they know what to say, and those feelings of shyness completely disappear. And that is the answer. You're right.
Well, I'll ask you this. What caused you to write this book? Was there something that just gave you the impetus to say, you know what, maybe I can help with this problem?
Yes, and it was an article that I was reading some years ago, because it did take a couple of years to put this together. And it was a poll from Harris Poll, Pew, and Gallup Organization. They all did individual polls separately. They're honorable companies. And they all came up with the same statistic, that 95, one of the great fears, it's behind public speaking, but one of the top five fears of 95% of the people in this country is that they are afraid of going over to someone they don't know and beginning a conversation. And when I read it, it just sort of staggered me at first, because I was like everybody else. It didn't occur to me that everybody felt like this. And it just hit me like a bolt of lightning, frankly, that I think I'm going to write a book to help these people out. And it was the same kind of bolt of lightning that I'm sure hits the heads of a lot of people who begin books.
To me, it was kind of surprising in the sense that a lot of our economy revolves around salespeople, and you would think that we wouldn't have this problem because salespeople are supposed to be able to talk to other people.
You know, it's not just salespeople, but I can tell you that I have met plenty of salespeople. And years ago, when even with cold calling and cold canvassing was accepted in this country, and people could walk into businesses and stores, and they were professionals, they knew what to say. They had their canned presentation. But I could tell you that I have met doctors and attorneys, litigators, that can get up in court and that you think that they're Shakespearean actors. And in their own environment, in their own office, they are charming, they are wonderful, and yet they go to a party, and if they don't know anybody, they can stand in a corner. It all comes down to just learning what to do.
All right, so what do you do in an everyday situation? And I've read a lot of the book, and the one thing I will say that in looking at it, I said, well, gee, these tips are pretty simple.
Yes, they are simple, and it's just that no one has really ever put them down, as you say, like that. And they are. It is not that complicated. I will tell you the magic key, and I'll offer your audience too. Because if they're driving, they don't want to stop and write this out. I'm going to get there. One is 10 magic words. It's use the environment around you and find an environmental prop. And the two words that are simpler to remember is it's a situational opener. But the reason why I call them 10 magic words is because in life, Chuck, we always seem to find out in many cases that there's always an exception to every rule somewhere. In this case, the exception to the rule is there is no exception to the rule. It really literally works all the time. That it's just as simple as just using the environment around you, finding a prop, and using it as a situational opener. Let's say, for example, and I'll give you the easiest one, but it's just an example. You're visiting in San Francisco, and you're going to the San Francisco Zoo. It is a world-famous tourist site. And you're looking at the Bengal tigers, and they're lying on the grass, and they're comfortable, and they always look so soft and gentle, and standing 2 or 3 feet from you is a man and a woman. Or to the right is a family. But, you know, they're 2-3 feet away. if you were to just twist your body 45 degrees to face them and not, you know, and just say, my gosh, they are so beautiful, but it's also hard to believe that you wouldn't want to go near them because they also could be so violent. Just anything like that, and everybody will give you an answer. And yet if you don't speak to them, they'll never speak to you. You could be at an art exhibit, and people, it's very quiet because people are looking up at the wall, at the Picassos or the Rembrandts or whatever they're showing. And there could be, again, a younger person next to you, an older person, a man, a woman. It doesn't matter. It's a human being. And just say, gee, it really is a beautiful picture. What do you think? And you're in a conversation. So that's the key. And what it is if you think about it, too, when you do that, you almost have an immediate bond with the person. If you could feel that and visualize it as I say it, is that you bond with that person over that comment. Does that help?
Yeah, and one thing that I think you bring up in the book, too, is to use open-ended statements and questions to allow a conversation to flow.
Oh, yeah. Boy, it's so great that you asked that question because there are so many people who are perplexed about this. And what happens is that you do get conversational dead-enders, and people use them all the time. It's like, oh, hi, how are you? Oh, fine, good. How are you? Great. And then, you know, no one knows what to say next. And the open-ended questions are the most important. But I will give your audience one tip. That most people will say, oh, well, you know, I'm not a trained reporter to know how to ask open-ended questions, or an attorney or a therapist. And many times you will start off with a closed-ended question, but then you have the moment to relax and then ask the open-ended question. Say, I heard you were on vacation, a coworker. Yeah, where did you go? Oh, I went to a Caribbean island. I went to France. And then that's a closed-ended question. But then a lot of people let it go by and just say, hey, that's great. Tell me what you did there. Or did you get to see the Eiffel Tower? Or how are the beaches in that island? And then you could ask an open-ended question, and the conversation will flow because it feeds on itself. So that when you, did you have a good weekend? Yeah. Hey, what did you do? Anything special? Then whatever the person's going to say, no, I hung out, blah, blah, or I watched a sporting event, or I went to visit somebody, then it's open-ended. Is that helpful?
Yeah, and here's another point I wanted to bring up before I forget is that, and I thought of this before, but I think you really put it very well in your book, that you can use silence, actually, your own personal silence, to keep a conversation moving.
Yes, silence is probably is a very powerful conversational tool that most people never even think about using. But it could be where you have a person who's telling you something that is kind of jolting in a kind of a way. And what you want to really do is let them express themselves, and you can then ask even a closed-end question and be silent. And someone might say, and it's happened in the last several years because of the economy. And a friend may say, gee, I just lost my job. And you say, oh, I am so sorry to hear that. What happened? And if you allow the silence, the people will unfold. They'll bring it out of them. And by the way, what is important here in the silence also is our conversational tools to keep it going. And what you do is you make eye contact when the person is talking. That's extremely important, to make eye contact so they can see that you're listening. And if they know you're listening, they will talk with you. And then you could say, aha, oh my, gee. And comments like that, that you know what they're like? It's like sometimes years ago, more than today, in cities they had traffic cops and or policemen. And not only for the cars, but they would keep the pedestrians on the corner until the light changed. And then when the light changed, you would see the policemen waving their hands onto the pedestrians. And it's interesting, the faster they waved, the faster the people walked. And that's what you're really doing. It's like you're waving your hand to pedestrians to keep them walking. And when you're saying, I see, oh, tell me more about that. And let the person talk while you remain silent, and it ends up being a great conversation for everybody.
Again, today we're on the front page, and I'm Chuck Mraz, and our guest is Mr. Marvin Brown, the author of the book, How to Meet and Talk to Anyone, Anywhere, Anytime. And we'll go ahead and pause on front page, come back with more right after this.
You know, sometimes people ask the wrong questions when it comes to their cars.
But a good mechanic has to be able to see right through to the heart of the matter.
The question is, we have drive, 3, 2, 1. When do I use the drive, and when do I use the 3?
Well, if you want to prolong the life of the transmission, you should leave the shifter in P.
Join us for Car Talk.
You can hear Car Talk Saturday and Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. on MSPR.
Welcome back to today's front page. Again, we're talking to Marvin Brown about his brand new book, How to Meet and Talk to Anyone, Anywhere, Anytime. And Mr. Brown, as we continue things, I know that folks often will wind up in conversations where perhaps that conversation will lead into an uncomfortable subject or area. What do you do in those cases? How do you kind of back away from that if you're not very comfortable with the subject matter that's being brought in front of you?
I'm glad you asked that question, because a lot of people do find themselves in situations where they do want to change the conversation, and they don't necessarily know how. And it is perfectly normal. See, this is something that we do all the time in conversations, and we don't think about it until we want to do it, and then we get nervous about doing it. But for example, someone may bring up a subject like, well, it's changing now in America, politics. Years ago, people really did not like to talk about politics in the United States, and today they do more of it. But it might get to a point where it just becomes stressful for you, because you feel there's a difference of opinion, and all you do is use a little body language, sort of look surprised for a second. You can even raise your shoulders up. And you say, oh, by the way, Chuck, forgive me for interrupting you, but I meant to talk to you about something. Or, oh, hey, Chuck, forgive me, we'll come back to this, but, you know, something happened to me this week. It was an interesting thing, and I wanted to just tell you about it. And people do this all the time in conversations, and without thinking about it, when it's very natural. But you can use it as a tool when you want to use it, so to speak. And people accept this all the time, because a conversation is a two-way street. It's a flow of traffic. You know, sometimes you go down a different road to get to a different to go a different way to where you want to go.
I guess also part of this would be, in the sense, I noticed that in your book you talk about almost repeating what that person said, in a way that you're asking a question, but you're basically repeating maybe the subject matter that they're talking about, but not passing judgment one way or another on the subject matter itself.
Yes. Let's say there are a couple of instances, and again, where someone did lose their job, and instead of, you could just say, you lost your job, and remain silent, and people will talk. See, or someone might say, you know, I'm selling my house. Instead of saying why, which is a challenge to the person, you could just say, you're selling your house? And you could remain silent. By the way, I will offer your audience one thing which I slipped my mind when you asked me before. Many times when you're negotiating a price with someone, a salesperson, and it's a situation where you can negotiate a price, like buying a car, so to speak, or even buying a home, and there are other items where people do ask for better prices, and if you look at the salesman or the sales lady and you just say, can you do better on the price? And you remain absolutely silent, because a lot of people do go on. They try to justify asking, and you say, can you do better? Because, you know, I might be able to get it cheaper. But if you just say, can you do better on the price, it puts a lot of pressure on the salesperson. And then they'll give you an answer. And then if you just say it again, you say, but is there a way where you really can do better? I am telling you, in my life and most of the people that I ever spoke to, if there is a chance to get a price, because it's in there, it's sitting there, the salesman has it, but he you know, he's going to hold back as long as he can. But when you do ask that question twice and you look, you make eye contact with the salesperson and say, yeah, but I know, but it, could you do better? It would help. And just look. More often than not, that price will come.
I guess last point, oftentimes we get into conversations with people, but then we realize at some point we may have something else to do, or we may not be enjoying the conversation, but we want to get out of it. And there, I guess, is a graceful way to do that.
Yeah, you know, I meet so many people who will tell me at parties that one of the reasons why they don't like to go over to people they don't know is because sometimes they want to get out of the conversation and they don't know how. And it stops them from really engaging some people because they feel they may get trapped. And the two suggestions that I have is to keep in mind that with people who we know, we do this all the time. If you and I, you know, were co-workers and I was at your desk and I said, oh, hey, by the way, I got to run. I have a project. Or if I met you in the street and we were, and you were a neighbor and I knew you for years and we were talking and I say, oh, Chuck, forgive me. I got to get back to work. And people understand that. And we do it with friends and relatives all the time, even on the phone, see? And yet people are afraid to do it with strangers. The one thing that I would urge people to do is to notice when people do it to them, where someone would say at a party, oh, hey, by the way, I promised someone I'd go over and talk to him, and I see them standing there, I have to go. It was really nice meeting you and talking with you. We'll meet again. And if someone said that to you, you'd think nothing of it at all. As a matter of fact, you might admire them for their confidence. And notice when people do end conversations with you, how it doesn't mean anything to your ego. It's perfectly normal. So you'll have the confidence to know that when you do it to someone else, they're not going to feel hurt. Providing, of course, you always leave them with the last line. Gee, I really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm sorry I have to go, but I have to go make a phone call. Or tie it up. Gee, that was an interesting story you told me. I'm glad we met. And pay him a compliment, and then leave.
Finally, I wanted to ask you how people could get a copy of your book. And again, the book is How to Meet and Talk to Anyone, Anywhere, Anytime.
My website is under reconstruction. It should be up soon, but the simplest thing in the world to do today in America, I guess, is to go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and type in How to Meet and Talk to Anyone, Anywhere, Anytime. It'll pop right up. Also, with, I'm very proud to say, amazingly great reviews. And by the way, for anybody who has a bookstore, that's the way they do it. You go in, give them the title. They'll have the book in the store within 5 or 6 days, and then you can go pick it up.
And, Gene, I've enjoyed our conversation here today.
Thank you, and so did I. Thank you very much.
And again, we've been talking to author Marvin Brown about his brand new book, How to Meet and Talk to Anyone, Anywhere, Anytime. I'm Chuck Mraz, host of The Front Page. We'll see you next time.